You can prove the existence of God in 10 seconds, and I will show you how on this week's episode of the Faith by Reason podcast. Welcome to the podcast. The website behind it all, as always, is faithbyreason.net, and there you will find the blog, our archives and categories, and a ton of information, our social media links, as well as this very podcast. And we are on the series, What's the Point? What's the point of existence? What is the meaning of life? And over the last couple of podcasts, we've been examining the first cause of existence and what the attributes of that first cause might be. And we know that there is a first cause of existence because of two things. We know that the universe is finite, therefore it's not endless. And we know through causality that since the universe is an effect, it had to have a cause. And since, again, the universe is finite, that first cause had to be a causeless cause. So getting to know that first cause is very important because that first cause will obviously have an answer to the question of what's the point of existence since the first cause caused existence. So what can we know about that first cause? What have we learned so far? Well, we learned in the past few podcasts, we've learned that the first cause is supernatural. Why? Because the universe could not have come into existence naturally. We looked at that a couple podcasts ago. So it had to come into existence supernaturally. Therefore, whatever caused it is also supernatural. We also know that the first cause is transcendent. The first cause is outside of physical time and space. And that's a high concept for us. It's kind of tough for us to wrap our minds around because we as human beings are limited by the physical time domain. So understanding it, an entity, a being, a force that is outside of time and space, is tough for us. And we tried to do that a little bit in the last podcast. So, you know, go check that out. We talk about how the first cause might see and experience time. But knowing that the first cause is transcendent and supernatural, that gives us one more attribute of the first cause, and that is the first cause must be non-physical and immaterial. Why? Because, again, as we learned a couple podcasts ago, time affects and is affected by something with physical mass. And since the first cause is not affected by time, the first cause must not have mass. It must be massless. The first cause has to be immaterial and obviously transcendent. And that begs the question, though, that how did this immaterial, non-physical first cause be the cause? How could it be the cause of our physical universe? And in order to understand that, we're going to have to make a shift in our thinking. We're going to have to make a paradigm shift in the way we assign value to things, because we tend to give more value and esteem more powerful things that are physical. We look at things like nuclear explosions and volcanoes and boulders rolling down a hill, and we look at those things and they seem powerful. They seem real. Physical things obviously seem more real to us than non-physical things like ideas and thoughts and emotions. So of course, if you see a nuclear explosion happen and then you see someone contemplating their spiritual life, you say, well, obviously the nuclear explosion is way more powerful because it can destroy stuff. And that volcano is more powerful, and that boulder rolling down the hill is more powerful. But is that really true? Is it possible for the non-physical to create the physical? Is it possible that the non-physical is the cause and the physical is the effect? Well, that's kind of the road we're going down if we believe that the first cause caused existence. And if that non-material is able to create the physical, then that would mean that the immaterial, the non-physical, is more powerful than the physical. And again, that's tough for us to wrap our minds around because it's just not our mindset. So let me give you an example of how the non-physical can cause and be more powerful and be a greater cause than the effect of the physical. We just exited a very volatile political season. In fact, I would dare say that we're probably still in a very volatile political season. As I'm recording this podcast in early 2017, we went through an election with two truly tragic, unfortunate candidates last November, and unfortunately, one of them had to win, and one of them did. And since then, we've just been on this political roller coaster, and it's been very volatile. Now, I tend to stay away from politics. I don't really like politics. Politics and politicians are one of my key examples of what brain damage looks like. And during normal, regular parts of the year, non-political seasons, you know, you see all these political pundits on the air, and they, again, epitomize brain damage. They say things that they know aren't true. They are complete hypocrites. What one candidate does is okay with them if they agree with that candidate or their politician, of that politician. But if they disagree with the politician, then what they're doing is evil, even though it's the exact same thing that the politician they like did and that they defended. And normally we can just kind of ignore these people, but when we're in the middle of a political season, especially a volatile political season like we just experienced, that brain damage spreads to the general population, and we all seem to become as irrational and hypocritical as the political pundits. I remember late last year, I was watching a television a news program, and it was showing some labor union people, and they were protesting something. And they, one of them had a sign, and that sign said, "Labor is the source of wealth," or you know that labor is the cause, if you will, of wealth. And I understand what they were trying to say. They're labor union, so they're sort of on the left side politically. And what they were trying to say is that their physical labor is a true source of the wealth that the business owner, that the CEO, that the factory owner really has, that without them, without their physical labor, then this person sitting in the office who, with the coat and tie who runs the place wouldn't really have that wealth. So they are the cause of the wealth. But is that really true? I would say it's not. I would say it's not the physical labor that's the cause of the wealth. And there are a couple of examples. Example number one is, how many laborers do you know that are wealthy? I don't know any. And so if labor was the cause of wealth, then wouldn't the laborers be wealthy? Well, they're not. The wealthy one is the business owner. The wealthiest one is the one who actually came up with the business idea. And I'll give you example number two. Let's look at an industry that relies on a lot of physical labor. That would be agriculture. Agriculture relies on people going out there and planting fruits and vegetables and picking them and sorting them and getting them ready to ship off to the stores. But how did agriculture start? Well, let's go back in time and look at the first farmer. How did farming begin? Well, going back in time, human beings were initially hunter-gatherers. We would go out and hunt for our food with, you know, spears and stones and whatnot. That's how we get our meat. And as far as getting fruits and vegetables, well, we basically would walk by and pick whatever we saw that was growing. If we saw an apple on a tree, we'd pick the apple. If we saw some onions growing down by the river, we'd get the onions. If we saw some potatoes underneath the ground, we knew what the plant looked like, we'd go in and get the potato. So that's how we would get our fruits and vegetables. It's pretty random. If you were in an area where there was no vegetation, well, you'd be out of luck. And if you were in an area that didn't have any animals migrating through, well, you'd probably starve to death because you wouldn't have your fruits and vegetables. So how did farming get started? Well, I would say that one day, hypothetically, there was a hunter-gatherer who was walking by, and he saw a piece of fruit that had fallen to the ground, fruit or vegetable that had fallen to the ground, and it was starting to rot, so he walked right by it. And every day he'd walk past it on his route, and he'd see it slowly break down, and you'd just have seeds there after a while, and then those seeds would get covered with dirt eventually, and then rain would happen. And then he noticed something interesting. When he walked by that area again, he noticed that there was a plant growing where those seeds were. And over time, he would notice that that plant would produce the fruit or vegetable that he initially saw rotting on the ground. And he had an idea. He said, wait a minute, that happened by accident. What if I intentionally put some seeds into the ground and watered them and grew my own fruits and vegetables? Well, now, instead of having to be a hunter-gatherer and going out and being in danger, being away from his family for days on end and probably getting mauled by a lion or slapped around by a bear or something, he can actually build a home and have a stable life and have his own food that he didn't have to go out and get. And what if this guy decided that, you know, I can produce so much of this food myself with my ideas. What if I got 10 more guys and taught them what I know and showed them the basics and made a deal with them and said, hey, you know what, if you help me produce the, some fruit, I'll let you keep 10% of it and you can live off that. And they say, okay, great, that sounds like a great idea. We don't have to worry about going out and hunting and gathering and, you know, getting beat up by an elk or something. We'll do that. And so now you have the first entrepreneur, the first wealthy man. Why is he wealthy? Because now he has 10 people doing that same amount of labor, and he can take what he needs for himself and his family, and the excess he can use to barter with other people, and he can trade it for animal skins and for meat and for other things. So this man is wealthy. Now, what was the source of his wealth? What was the cause of his wealth? Was it labor? No, he didn't do any labor to learn what he needed to know to grow fruits and vegetables. It was just his ideas. It was just his observation, him watching what happened when that piece of fruit fell to the ground and eventually became a plant that produced the same fruit. By doing that and processing the information, he was able to create wealth. So the source of his wealth was immaterial. It was his ideas, his ability to think and process it. Now, what if these laborers said, hey, you know, we don't like only getting 10%. We're going to go on strike. It's okay, you guys, go ahead. I can find 10 other guys that I could teach the same thing to them and they'll do the same work for me. I don't need your physical labor. All I need to create my wealth are my ideas. So the ideas created the wealth, not the labor. So sorry, labor unions. And that's why you're poor. And so that is an example of how the immaterial, the non-physical, can cause the physical. Now let's take that on a greater level, the grandest level of all, and look at our entire existence. And I would dare say that information is the immaterial thing that caused our existence, that caused the universe. It was information. But not just any information. I mean, we all have information. I have information, you have information, everyone does, but not all of us can create the universe out of nothing. So what kind of information are we talking about? Well, it has to be information that comes from a being or an entity that has all the information that has ever existed or ever will exist. Where would that information come from? How will we know how can we analyze it? Well, I think we can use the ladder of causality to take all the information that's ever existed and then bring it all the way down that ladder to find out the very first source or the cause or the initial cause of all that information. The physical world is an effect of information. We just saw that. What is information an effect of? Information is an effect of knowledge. And knowledge is an effect of thinking. Thinking is an effect of intelligence. Intelligence is an effect of the ability to process stimuli. And that ability to process is governed by objective principles. So at the bottom of the ladder of causality for the physical world and for information are principles. Principles are the cause of information, which is the cause of the physical world. Look at DNA, for example. Our DNA in every one of our cells is basically, it's an information code. It's a 4x3 digital information code. But that information is what causes all the physical effects that we see in our body, and all of the physical traits of our body is in that information. And without that information, we could never reproduce, and we would never grow. So, and DNA is just information. And here's the cool thing. Principles are not just the first cause of the physical world. They're the first cause of you. You know, the real you is principles. The real you is not physical. The real you is immaterial. The real you is not that physical body I see. Because you can get to know someone without ever meeting them physically. You can get to know who they really are without ever seeing them physically. And I'll give you a very, very personal example. My wife and I. When my wife and I first met, we were introduced via long distance through family. We had never met each other. And we started talking over the phone and over email, and we got to know each other. And we fell in love with each other without ever physically interacting with each other. But over those several months, there were reasons that we weren't able to be together because of distance and some other things. But the bottom line is that I got to know the real her, and she got to know the real me without any physical contact, because the real us, the real her, the real me, are the principles, the thoughts, the knowledge, the thinking, the intelligence that makes up who we are. Now, of course, I had to see a picture of her to make sure she was hot, and she was and is, but that helped. But we got to know each other without any type of physical, without being in physical proximity of each other. Here's another example that may clarify things even more. A look at the thing that's in front of you right now, the thing you're listening to this podcast on, be it your computer or your smart device. It's made up of two things, software and hardware. The hardware is the metal, the plastic, the glass, the circuits that make up the physical object. The software is the programming that actually makes it function. Now, without that software, that hardware is pretty useless. It's just basically a paperweight. But without the physical device, the software is fungible. It can go, you can put that software in another device and it'll work just fine. So software without the device is perfectly useful, but that device without software is absolutely useless. Now let's do a little experiment. Let's take what some of the medium that we put a software on, like a disk or a USB drive or something like that. So take a blank disk or USB drive or whatever and weigh it. And then load it up with all the software it'll possibly hold and weigh it again. You will find that it weighs exactly the same. You know why? Because software is weightless. It has no mass. And here's the thing. You, the real you, is software. The bodies we walk around in and use to interact with the physical world, that's hardware. But that's not the real you. The real you is software. And software is massless. It's weightless. You know what that means? Since the software has no mass, then that means it's not subject to time. Remember, time only affects and is affected by things that have mass. And the real you does not have mass. The real you is not subject to time. Now, when we're in these physical bodies, we're limited in the time domain because our bodies are physical. But the real us, when these bodies pass away, is going to keep going because it is outside of time, meaning that the real you is eternal. And that's either good news or bad news, depending on where you're going to spend your eternity. And we'll get into that stuff way down the road. But for now, let it be known that you are eternal. You are the principles that make up your personality, your intelligence, the way you process information, the way you react to things. That's the real you. Your principles make up who you are. And there's actually a word for that, those principles that make up who we are. And that word is spirit. We are spirit. That's what we are. We are spirit in these, you know, flesh machines that we drive around. But we are spirit because we're made of principles. Now, what's the other thing that's made of principles? We just talked about that a few minutes ago. It's the first cause. The first cause consists of principles. Whatever the, when you go down the ladder of causality, the information that created the universe comes from principles. But those principles are different than our principles. And by the way, just as an aside, I think it's very important for you to find out what your principles are. They'll be very helpful in understanding who you are and why you think the way you do. And I'll put a link into the show notes about a tool that can help you figure out your principles and figure out the real you. It's great stuff to know. But what are the principles that make up the first cause? Well, they are unique in that these have to be causeless principles. Remember, the first cause, it has no precedent causes. So the principles that the first cause is made of, or that the first cause comes from, or that the first cause consists of, have to also be causeless principles. Are there causeless principles? Yes, there are. There are two. There is a qualitative and quantitative principles that make up the first cause. The qualitative principle is called right. It's pretty binary. Something is either right or it's not right. And the reason that we know that right is a causeless principle is because there can be no wrong unless right exists first to define it. You see, wrong isn't its own thing. When something is wrong, it's a measurement of how not right something is. So you can't know what wrong is unless right exists first. And since the most basic qualitative principle that exists is right, then right is the first causeless principle. The other causeless principle is just or justice. And what just is, it means, it's basically stasis. It means that everything equals out. And we know that it's also causeless because its antecedent would be injustice. But like wrong, injustice doesn't exist on its own. Injustice is a measurement of how not just something is. So at the bottom line, the bottom of the ladder of causality, the bottom line quantitative principle is just. So the first cause is made up of those two principles of right and just, because there's nothing on the ladder a rung below those two things. And since no other principles existed before, then we know that the first cause is not just right and just, but it has to be always and completely right and just, because there was no wrong or injustice before it. So the first cause is always and completely right and just. And so at the most basic level, that's all we can really know about the first cause based purely on our human understanding. There's nothing else we can know about the first cause other than it's always and completely right and just. So what do we do with that? Do we just stop since we can't know anything else based on human logic and reason? Well, we have to stop with human logic and reason from there. And we have to realize that if there's anything else we can definitively know about the first cause, it would have to come from the first cause itself, wouldn't it? And if the first cause is always and completely right and just, then whatever the first cause says about itself would also have to be completely right and just, which means we can trust it. Well, that begs the question, do we have any information from the first cause? I believe we do, and I believe that information source is called the Bible. Now, I know I'm getting way ahead of myself by presuming that the Bible is from the first cause, but as is the MO of this podcast, I'm not going to just say it, I'm going to prove it. And in the next podcast, I'm going to prove that the Judeo-Christian Bible is the word of the first cause. And of course, we call that first cause God. Now, Christians do not have a monopoly on believing that they have a word from the first cause or information from the first cause. All kinds of faith-based and even secular sources believe that they have information about or from the first cause. And it would only be fair to explore all of those in a contrastive manner and see if I'm right, if the Judeo-Christian Bible is truly from the first cause. So to summarize, the first cause is made of the causeless principles of right and just, and that's all we can know about that first cause. And I believe that that first cause is God. Now, wait a minute, you might be saying, especially if you're a Christian, that can't be all that God is. God cannot just be these causeless principles of right and just floating out there in the ether. God is loving. God is merciful. God is compassionate. God is all these different things. Absolutely, he is. But all those things that God is, all those other attributes, those are effects. The cause of all of those effects, the cause of the way God thinks and the way he understands things and his intelligence, those are all effects. And that's where the mercy and compassion and the love comes in. And he has all those attributes, but he doesn't have all those attributes in an always in complete fashion the way he does righteousness and justice. I'll give you an example. God is merciful, but God is not always and completely merciful. Why? Because mercy is the delay of justice. When God is merciful to you, when you do something wrong, that means he's giving you time before he renders judgment. He's giving you time to make amends. But he can't be always merciful, because if he was always merciful, he would never be able to render justice in a final matter, which he does and which he must if he's always just. And we're going to get into all of God's various attributes down the road in the podcast. In fact, we'll get into it in a couple of podcasts from now when we talk about love. And that's some really fascinating things about that. So let's wrap up this episode by fulfilling the promise that I made in the very beginning. How to prove God in 10 seconds. Here it goes. Get your stopwatch ready. And go. For every effect, there's a cause. And that cause is greater than and outside of the effect. The universe is an effect. Therefore, whatever caused the universe is God. And we know it's supernatural, so God is supernatural. And that's God. 10 seconds up. So the existence of God is predicated on causality, and we all believe in causality. And again, as I said in the second episode of this podcast, if ever find anyone who says they don't believe in causality, just punch them in the face. And when they ask you why you punch them, tell them there is no why, because you don't believe in causality. That punch in the face was causeless. And when they ask you why you punch them, they are already admitting that they believe in causality. So causality proves that God exists. And I know what you might be thinking. Wait a minute. How does that prove that this is the same God who created Adam and Eve and flooded the world and had and spawned Israel and Jesus and all the different kings and all the different things that happened in the Bible? How do we know that that's the same God? Well, that's actually a different question. That's a question of God's identity. I only said I would show you how to prove God's existence in 10 seconds, and I did that. As far as who God's identity is, well, we're going to start working on that in the next podcast, where we start to look at what God actually says about himself, and that is the only other source of information we can have about who and what the first cause, what God actually is. So that's going to wrap things up for this episode of the Faith by Reason podcast. Thank you for listening. Please make sure you subscribe to the podcast so you get them every week. Follow us on social media. Please give me your comments. I'd love to hear them. And we will talk again next week when we look at what could be the possible information source from the first cause that tells us more about those attributes other than him being always and completely right and just. Look forward to it, and I will talk to you next week.